Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. I'm so glad you guys are tuning into this episode. Whatever it is that you're dealing with today specifically or going through at the moment, I just hope that your takeaway from this episode is going to give you what you need. Is it hope, inspiration, validation, some tips on how to treat this or detox more affordable? Whatever it is that you need today, I hope that that's what you get from this episode. And if you want to continue to help me share my voice and our voice in the community, please go into the about of this podcast, scroll to the bottom, click on that donation link. Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. And I'm so happy to have this next guest because I know, listeners, if you've listened to me at all, you've heard, you know, one of the many, many blessings of my Lyme journey is just the people I met along the way and the friendships that you build and the relationships. And a lot of times we don't even know these people in real life. Thank goodness for Zoom, right? Yes. I guess it was a few months ago, I had a guest on who referred me to my next guest now. And, you know, we just are almost two peas in a pod. We have so much in common. Our journeys are a lot alike. Our lifestyles are a lot alike. So it's been really, really fun getting to know her, not on a sick level, right? Like, because we're healthy on just, so it's just been a lot of fun. She has her own podcast, and I was actually just recently a guest on there sharing my Lyme journey. And so it's an honor to have her on here with me today to share her journey. And I just appreciate you so much, Anne. And I am so happy you're in part of my village now. So welcome to the show, Anne. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tanya. I feel exactly the same. And I do think about the similarities in our stories. We're both sick for 7 years. We both turned this into something very beautiful and doing our best to spread awareness and hope and inspiration for people who are still stuck in the middle. And, you know, obviously we have the same heart. And I just am really grateful to meet you as well through this journey.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and that's the only reason why we do it is because we were so desperate. We were so down and out. We were, you know, our darkest days, and we felt like nobody cared. Nobody understood. Nobody knew what we were going through. And so if we can just help one person, right, by sharing our story, it's worth it, you know. But because we both have a podcast talking all about Lyme, I mean, there's hundreds and thousands of people out there listening that are benefiting from just that hope and inspiration. So I so appreciate what you do. And I just know that it's fun to see people that get well and then they turn themselves into advocating for Lyme. It's definitely a beautiful thing.
It is, very much so.
All right. So where do we want to start? How long ago do we go?
Oh, gosh. Well, it was funny. I just saw my uncle's in the hospital right now recovering from surgery, and I was spending some time with them last night and just thinking about things. And I was like, you know, I'm pretty sure the tick that got me sick was when I was 20. I had come home from California. I lived out on the West Coast for a few years, and I came back to visit my family. We're at my grandmother's house, and actually I just passed that house tonight on the way back from the acupuncturist. He's like a block down from where her house was. And I got my picture taken out back with a bunch of my cousins. And later that night I went to shower at my parents, and I thought I nicked myself shaving. And I just thought it was like a little splotch of blood. And I tried to like pick it off, and then it moved. It was attached, and I was like, ah, you know, like total panic because I knew what it was. And my dad is a retired ER physician, but at the time he was still practicing medicine, and I called for him and he came up and took it off of me. And he was a good doctor in the sense that he knew to put me on antibiotics for 30 days, but we know that doesn't necessarily fix things in that duration of time. Like, no, I understand now a lot more about that life cycle. And technically speaking, I would have had to been on it for like 12 to 16 weeks or something, comparatively speaking, to effectively eradicate it at that point. But God bless him, he at least tried his best to prophylactically help me. And then through my 20s, life wasn't exactly easy. I was in a pretty toxic relationship. It didn't start off that way, but over the duration of 9 years, it turned out to be pretty bad. And that person had some autoimmune disorders going on, and I could understand why he was so angry, but he was choosing to not necessarily take care of himself. And that was hard to watch and experience. And I was working two jobs. I had gone back to college. I was taking 5 to 6 classes a semester. So like I was really just piling everything on to myself. And I'm the kind of person, we had talked about this a little bit on earlier, but it's like, I'm not so good at asking for help and I've got a lot of pride and I just put on my face like everything was okay. And I kept plowing through and going. And then towards the end of that relationship, things really got bad. And I think that's kind of the catalyst in a sense. Like I went for a massage and that lady, I didn't tell anyone this, but she said to me, you know, your soul's dying. And I was like, what? How do you know this? Right? Like, she's like, your soul is dying. You really need to do something differently with your life. And I just remember crying my face off. And I was just like, how does she know? And that for me was like, Anne, you really need to do something differently here.
Wow. And
then, yeah, I often thank her for having such good insight and understanding me so well.
Yeah.
But like, I wasn't talking to her about it at all, I assure you. And then that relationship ended rather dramatically, if you will. And after that point in time is really when a lot of my symptoms started to come into play. And I think, again, that was just sort of like the final push off the cliff for me. I was already just like hanging by a thread, and then my whole life just got uprooted, and I was living in a state of fear for a while. I was constantly checking over my shoulder for this person. My parents wanted me to get a PFA, but I didn't necessarily want to go that route because then I'd actually have to like see that person in court. I just wanted to get as far away from that person as possible by that time. And I was an emotional wreck. And I would cry a lot. My friends, God bless, I had really good friends that would call me every day to check on me. But I started to have fatigue, just like the worst fatigue I can ever possibly try to explain to a human. I can almost not remember, but it was crippling. Like I couldn't even get off a couch to go visit a friend who had come home for the holidays from California. And I felt like the biggest jerk and just like the worst person possible because I was not a good friend. I was not able to support anybody. I just sat there on my couch and cried and was just, again, the fatigue was like, how I try to explain it is if I drank and went on a bender every day for a month straight and I didn't sleep at all and I ran a marathon every day of that week as well, I probably still wouldn't even be that tired. Like it just was very bad. And then I started to have some memory issues. I started to have trouble remembering people's names that I had known for my entire life. I had a hard time remembering where I was driving to. I was starting to get a little bit freaked out by that. I get this very strange sensation on the left side of my face sometimes in the shower. And I remember somebody telling me after like that the shower can actually be a trigger for symptoms, but I've never really like read about that or anything, but I do remember someone telling me that. And in hindsight, I think that was Bell's palsy.
Oh yeah. Right.
But I didn't realize it. My whole face wasn't drooping like I would have pictured traditionally. Like
you, but you could just feel something on the inside of it.
Yeah. Like my face was melting off. I remember I was training a young lady in my prior career and I was like, does my face look okay? And she's like, yeah, why? And I was like, man, cause it feels like the whole thing is melting off on the left side, but okay. And
almost like if you get back from the dentist and you're numb, right? It looks like, it feels like it's all off, but you look perfectly fine. That kind of feeling?
Yes. Kind of along those lines. Yes. And it just wasn't visible. Like I couldn't see anything, but I could feel it. Mm. And then what else started to happen to me? Like I had some issues with insomnia. I'd have night sweats. I have hives often. Just like a lot of random symptoms that really didn't seem to make sense. And again, on emotional spectrum, I was a mess. Like I was crying a lot. I was really angry a lot. I had a lot of OCD. I would leave my house and come back and check to make sure the door was locked. Just very distrustful of people. I was very weird. Like I kind of became a hermit and it was not who I normally am. So I started to look for help from doctors and I can remember many times and, you know, again, my dad being a physician in the community, like he had connections and people were doing their best to try to help me because they knew I was my dad's daughter and they really bent over backwards with tests and do this and do that. And I eventually went for a sleep study because I thought maybe I had apnea because that ran in my family, because the fatigue also would hit me in the afternoons. So I thought maybe I was having trouble digesting my food and like maybe that was making me so sleepy. I can remember sitting at my desk one time and my boss, I was trying to see if I could actually fall asleep and my boss walked up behind me and I was like, okay. But like, that's how tired I was. Like, I was like, maybe if I just fall asleep here in my cube for a second, it'll be okay. And when I went for the sleep study, I didn't have apnea, but then they did notice something abnormal with my brain scan and they made me do a sleep study the next day. So I had to do a series of 5 naps where I went into REM 3 out of 5 times within 5 minutes, which they thought was very abnormal. And they told me I had narcolepsy. So they put me on a shift sleep disorder stimulant. And I started taking that and I was like, okay, great. I don't think I have narcolepsy, but maybe this stuff will work. Cause I mean, I was taking caffeine pills. I was doing anything and everything to try to wake myself up and it didn't matter. And so then when I went back to see that guy in like a month, he's like, what do you mean you don't feel any different? And I was like, I'm still really tired. And he's like, that shouldn't be. This stuff here is like supposed to make you wake up like this. Something, you know, but then they started giving me the whole lecture about it being stress and depression. And I was like, listen, I'm depressed because I feel like poop every day of my life. It's not the depression that's making me feel sick. Something is really unwell in my body. Like I don't feel well. So then we did a lot of allergy testing because again, I was getting these hives all the time here. And sometimes my eyes would puff up so big and then my skin would get turned like crocodile skin. It would get really scaly and like broken. And it was awful looking. Like I wouldn't even want to go out of the house. Like I was so embarrassed. And so we did the allergy testing and I was allergic to mold, mites, dust, and cats, which was really like no surprise to me. Most people are probably having a little bit of sensitivity to these things and cats.
Tell me something new.
I knew I was allergic to them. I'm like, okay, great. But when they did those tests, they also checked my thyroid, which something did register with my thyroid. It was slightly abnormal. And they sent it to a specialist who deemed that everything was fine. And that really wasn't my problem. Okay. I had elevated white blood cell count, which I had just gotten over a cold. So I thought maybe that's what that was, but there were some abnormalities, like minor, but definitely something there. And so I just kind of went on my way after all the testing. And I remember at one point too, I started to Google like my symptoms and then I thought I had HIV and I went to the human services department here and I didn't really know what to expect. I never had taken an HIV test before, but I walked into that office and the lady basically like swabbed my mouth before I even told her my name. And I was like, okay, you know, like it was just like, poosh.
Wow.
And so then I'm sitting there waiting for 20 minutes for my results. And like, I felt bad for the person below me because I was like a jackhammer, just like my legs were going. I was like so nervous, like, oh, and I'm reading all these pamphlets about how to tell your family and loved ones that you have HIV. And like, I was convinced that that's what was wrong with me. Cause again, all my symptoms aligned with that. And she came back and she didn't make eye contact with me, which that set me off the edge. Like I just burst into tears and I was like, oh my God, she can't even look at me because I have it.
Cause that's the answer. Yeah.
Help me. Oh God, please. You know? And she's like, are you okay? And I was like, no, I'm not. Like, can we just get through this? And she's like, you don't have it. Relax, stay off the internet. And I was like, okay, but like something is really wrong with me. And I can remember begging my gynecologist, like, why am I so tired all the time? She didn't have any insight for me. I went to the dentist and my hygienist was like, what is going on with you? The plaque on your teeth is a lot different. What is happening here? And I burst into tears because I was like, oh my God, it's a medical person who's actually acknowledging that there's something different in my body. And she's like, I'm going to recommend you get screened for diabetes, thyroid. What else did she say? Vitamin D deficiency and anemia. And I was like, okay, I've already been tested for these things, but back I go, try to get some more blood work, see what's happening. Nothing, nothing, nothing. Just keep telling me I'm too stressed. Okay, fine. So I gave up. And after about 4 years of trying back and forth with different doctors and trying to understand what was happening, I just started to drink a lot of alcohol because that was about the only thing that I could do to sleep. And I'd come home from work. I was working really long hours, 10 to 12 hour days. I'd come home. I'd just pick up the bottle of vodka. I didn't even have a cup or a glass. I just down it. out of the bottle and get myself really torn up and pass out and get up and do it again the next day. And that was a cycle that I lived in for like 2 or 3 years and very unhealthy. And I can remember my parents, God bless them, I didn't tell anyone either what was happening, because when doctors continually tell you that there's nothing wrong with you, then you just start to feel like, okay, there's nothing wrong with me, but there's something wrong with me. And I can't really tell anyone about it because there's nothing wrong, medically wrong with me. So it's got to be something psychological.
All in my head. And how embarrassing. Why would we tell anybody something's all in our head?
Yeah. And I struggled with that a lot. And I just, you know, but I would meet them out for dinner sometimes after work. They were so good to me that just didn't understand. And I can remember many times in restaurants just crying or being very angry. And I went to dinner with my aunt one time and I started to tell her how tired I was. And she was like, okay, I remember when I was in my 30s, I got this incredible fatigue suddenly and it went away just almost as suddenly as it came. And I'm so glad she told me that, because that gave me something to hold on to. And I was like, okay, it's something genetic. Just give it some more time and it'll dissipate. It's going to go away on its own. But then my symptoms just kept getting worse. I started to have heart fluttering problems. I started to lose the hearing in my left ear. I couldn't put a screw through a hole anymore. Like, I had no coordination.
Left. Yeah.
And then I would get incredibly dizzy. So I would be driving, and if I turned my head too fast, I got really dizzy, which I didn't, I had begun to accept the fact that I was going to die. And I knew that, walking my dog, maybe I would just fall over dead on the sidewalk and they would find me and they would be able to then do an autopsy on me and see like, oh, it's her heart valve or something that got connected wrong when she was born. And that's what has been troubling her for this long. There was really something wrong with her. Cause again, none of it made sense to me. And, so once that dizziness was happening, and I drove a lot for work. I can remember one of the last trips that I took before I finally made an appointment to go back. I asked online for Eastern-minded doctors at this point, because the Western medicine people I wasn't getting anywhere with. And I was like, maybe someone else knows a different way to help me through this. But I drove to Delaware. I live in Pennsylvania. I was going to see a customer for work. And I was really scared to drive because I was having a hard time staying awake. I was having a hard time functioning. And I stopped at the beach on my way home, and it was a private beach, but I'm like in my work outfit, you know, and I take off my work shoes and I go out to the beach and I hear this little kid yelling at his mom, like, what's she doing here? And I wanted to just be like, this is probably the last time I'm ever going to see the ocean. Can you just plug it and leave me alone? Cause I'm pretty sure I'm going to get told that I've got brain cancer, because again, I couldn't, like, nothing else made sense. And neurologically I was devolving so quickly that was the only thing left for me. Like, we've done all these tests. There's nothing else that they've not looked at for you. It's got to be a brain tumor. And I was so grateful to stop, but I took a picture of myself on the beach that day. And when I look at it now, there was no life in my eyes. Like, it was like the lights were on, but nobody's home. I was a living, breathing zombie. That's what I was reduced to. I my brain didn't work anymore. I could hardly function. But the light in my eyes was gone. And I'm kind of glad I have that as a marker to show me like how far I've come now. But, I think it was pretty much like maybe the next week. I'm trying to like put this into timing. I can't quite remember. That was more towards the end of July, but I had told my parents, I loved them very much. I was going to the doctor the next day. But I was pretty sure I had a brain tumor, and they're like, what? You know, like, they didn't, again, I didn't really share the extensiveness of what was happening to me. And when I went to the physician that I was referred to by Facebook, lo and behold, that lady actually had done her residency under my dad in the ER, but she was a DO. And so she was more into like looking at the whole picture and seeing the whole human. And when I went to the office,
what a coincidence.
it is. And there's even another interesting twist in that office that lady worked in, the head physician there. I had waited on her table. I was a waitress at one time at a fine dining restaurant, which was right down the street from this office. And she, I don't try to ever eavesdrop on people, but I did hear her say this to her dinner party one night, in that she had found a tick crawling on her head and she had put herself on antibiotics just to be safe. And that was like 10 years before I wound up going to that office.
And you recognize this lady?
I knew her. From that restaurant. Like, I knew who she was very much so, because she would come in there pretty often.
She was a pretty
active member in the community. And I was kind of grateful to go there again, because like, I already knew enough about her. And I think her kids had gone to my high school, and some of my younger cousins knew her kids. And so it's like, it's just, you know, close in the community that way here. And when I told that doctor, I think she's a PA, when I told her everything about me and all of my symptoms, she was like, okay. And I'm like demanding to be tested for all kinds of wild things at this point, because there's really nothing left that I can think of. And she's like, just, I'm pretty sure you've got Lyme disease. I've already diagnosed 9 people this week. It was a Wednesday, or 7 or 9 people. I can't remember, but it was a good number, in my opinion, by a Wednesday. That she's telling. And I was like, okay. And that was a Wednesday. I went for blood work right away. I got the results on a Friday, because I was down at the beach with my family. And I just remember getting the results, and I was like, eureka. I was so thankful. I was so thankful, because I was like, okay, now I can do something. You know, I used to go to the vitamin shop and I would beg those people for help for things that would make me have more energy. Like, they're probably like, oh, she's back again, you know, because
we seem crazy. Yeah. We seem crazy. And yeah, no. So I remember that vividly when I got, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm not crazy. Like, something is really wrong with me. I was over the moon excited. But of course, I didn't know anything about Lyme disease. No idea what it was. Either. I thought only dogs got it. Didn't know. Wasn't excited, but it was still exciting. Right. Just that validation that you're not crazy. Something is wrong with you. And it's so sad how many of us have to suffer for so many years and decades sometimes before we can get a diagnosis, you know? And I think that a huge part of that is a huge population of the people that commit suicide from Lyme, is they can't get well if there's nothing wrong with them, right? So it's just, we just need so many more things. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. I was there. And I had a boyfriend that lived in Alabama, and we had met here in Pennsylvania. His company is here, and he was up on a work trip, and that's how we connected. And he was really good to me, but he didn't have to see me all the time, and I didn't have to tell him, right? And he's a big military enthusiast, and he sent me a gun for Christmas one year. And when he told me that was getting mailed to me, like, my hands started to sweat, and I was like, oh dear God, like, this is probably going to be the end of me. And he has no idea what he's just done. But I did sit there with that many times, thinking about just going, because, you know, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't do my wash. I couldn't cook for my, I didn't have the will to do anything. Yeah. And I tried to sell my house. Thank God it fell through, because that would have been a big mistake. And God is always with me, and God is always protecting. And I'm just so thankful, because I had some family that helped me through that challenge. And I'm just so thankful, because that toxic person, I made some poor choices financially through that I bore the burden of that. And it was a very hard recovery from that financially as well. And like, it's just all the stress too, I think, that just triggered a lot of this. But yes, miraculously, I got a diagnosis, which, interestingly enough, I had gone to a lecture with Johns Hopkins. And I remember the guy saying, you know, the longer you go with it, the more chances you have of getting an accurate test. And I was like, well, there you go. 7 years later, at least there's one benefit to having it take so long that I actually got an accurate test result. Fantastic. So perfect. So again, I was very familiar with Lyme and tick. My mom always made us put repellent on when we would go outside as kids. We played in the woods all the time. And she was constantly checking us, telling me about Bell's palsy, freaking me out about, like, she was definitely knowledgeable about this. And so when I got my diagnosis, I was like, great, I'm just going to take antibiotics for 30 days and I'm going to be good. Mm-hmm. Well, I do remember pretty much instantly when I started the antibiotics, starting to regain my humanness, if you will. and the ability to talk. I couldn't even have a conversation because I couldn't remember what I was talking to people about. Like, I'd have to wait for you to say something back to me to like have a, something to say to you again, just because I couldn't remember. I couldn't do the back and forth bantering.
One of my horrible traits I picked up along my Lyme journey, and still I think I'm like 80% better. And actually, I could probably ask my guests this. I got in a habit of interrupting people. And the reason I did was because if I didn't say it right now, I guarantee you, I can't tell you in 2 seconds, I will forget.
Yep. I get that.
That was what you mean when you say you can't have this conversation. Like you just, you have to say it. And so it's a little bit of, I guess, that PTSD after the fact, right? Maybe like I'm talking to somebody and I just automatically want to say it because what if I forget? I probably won't and I'm good and I'm going to remember, but we don't know. It's that whole just retraining, you know.
That's right.
Getting
That's
well right. afterwards. But yeah, so sorry, didn't mean to interrupt, Anne, but I'm really good at it.
You're just fine. And because I can remember where I was. That's a good thing. I'm better that way now. Otherwise, we'd be looking at each other wondering why I'm not talking yet. But, yeah. And so I, again, started to come back to life. And I can remember just crying and thanking God that I was able to feel like a person again. And I was able to have a brain again. And maybe about the third week on antibiotics, they started me with 5 weeks of doxy. I started to slip back again. And I was out to dinner with two friends and I couldn't remember what we were talking about. And I just lost it because I was like, I cannot go back to zombie zone. I cannot. And the holidays were coming. I was looking forward to actually being able to enjoy my holidays for once because it'd been so long since I had energy to do that. And I called the doctor and I was like, listen, I need more antibiotics. I'm not ready to come off of these. Like, can you please give me some more? And again, she knew me and she's like, well, let's get you tested again and let's see what happens with that. And the second time I was tested, instead of positive, I came back equivocal, which I didn't necessarily understand, but in my head, it was better than positive. I was at least moving in the right direction. And I was like, okay, great. So going more towards equivocal. Okay, I can do this. And then she was like, okay, well, we'll give you 3 more weeks, which I was really grateful for. We finished out the 8 weeks of antibiotics. I felt pretty good, better than I had. And I was like, okay, I can do this. And then I got bit by a mosquito around Memorial Day the following year. And I did get a bullseye. And I was a little bit like, there's no way I had a tick on me. Cause like I'm constantly checking my body and like feeling I've gotten a little more relaxed in the last bit. And I'm like, maybe I shouldn't. I just got to keep being like a freak about it. But at that point, like there's no way I had a tick on me. So I was convinced it was from a mosquito, but I sent her a picture of it. And she was like, okay, we're going to put you back on some antibiotics. So I did some more medicine. And when I came off of it that time, I still didn't feel right. And that's when I started to do something called quick tick tips. I was doing my best to do educational videos every day. I would just do a quick tick tip, try to educate my community on Facebook. But when I saw the recordings, I could see my face wasn't moving right. And I was like, oh dear God, that's when I noticed I had Bell's palsy. Because again, it wasn't like my whole face was like droopy like this. It was just like sort of not moving right. Like,
so it definitely wasn't moving right, but probably only you noticed it. I'm assuming.
I can't believe no one else noticed it, or like a medically trained person with their eyes didn't notice that happening. But again, putting on your makeup in the morning and my face isn't moving, right? Like I'm not talking to myself, generally speaking, when I'm putting my makeup on. So I didn't really see that. And so then when I actually started to record myself being alive and talking is when I noticed that that was not right with my face. And that was enough to sit a little bit more on the vein side. And that was enough that I was like, I don't care how much it costs. I'm going to a Lyme specialist. I already knew it was probably going to be expensive to see them because at this point, then again, my brain's working well enough that I can do these quick tick tips. Although when I watch them now, I can see how much I was not okay.
You, you weren't quite as good as you thought you were.
No. But I was better than I was. So like, okay. But anybody watching those, I'm so sorry. That was probably pretty painful, but I did my best. And
Are they still out there?
Oh yeah. They're on my Facebook page for sure.
Okay, because we want to know where people can watch these.
Yeah, you'd have to probably dig back pretty far because this is now, again, going back like 7 years.
Okay.
And my friend had tried to encourage me to start a YouTube page at that time, but I was like, I don't even know what I'm doing here. Like, this is just working just fine for me. I'm good with what I got. And sometimes I kind of maybe regret, I don't regret it, but like it would have been fun if I had that collection more easily accessible.
Yeah.
But they're there if you really want to dig for them. And occasionally one will pop up on my memory and I'm like, oh, my face. Oh God. Like you can just see again, there's like not much life in my eyes.
Yeah.
But I was going and I started a support group for my community here in Berks County. I was very committed to just trying to educate others so they didn't have to go through what I had gone through. And I reached out to a group called PA Lyme Resource Network. And that's actually my parent organization. They're 501c3. So if you're interested in donating, if you're living in the state of Pennsylvania, or even if you're not, we are a completely volunteer-based organization. And we do get funding occasionally from the state to help to teach different groups, different companies, different, like I did one for the Audubon Society or like the UGI workers or whomever, whichever group, PennDOT, that wants to be training their workers on better safety about this. And so I learned how to do that. But even that presentation, when the first time I did it, I was like a robot. Like I was like reading everything. I was so nervous. I didn't know, you know, like I still wasn't quite okay. But it became very important to me, again, just to do my best to educate in the community. And I had met a ILADS, so a Lyme literate physician, and not ILADS doctor, if those are listening, not familiar, International Lyme and Associated Disease Society physician in that organization. And I partly signed up for this because I was being a little selfish too, that I wanted to have the inside track so I could help myself better.
Yeah.
And I went to see this lady. She's a nurse practitioner. So she was a little bit cheaper than the physicians, right? Some of the doctors were $1,200 an hour. This lady was $550 an hour. So I felt like I was getting a deal and I would go to see
such
her.
Such a steal, Anne.
I know, let me tell you. I'd see her every 4 to 6 weeks and I'd leave crying every time because it was easily $1,000 each clip. And, you know, I didn't have a lot of money at that time. And again, I've already confessed that financially I was not in a good space because of that toxic relationship that left me with a mountain of debt to navigate through. And I remember laying in bed a lot of times wondering if they were going to come repo my car that night or what was going to happen to me. I was getting ready to sign up for a food banks because like I was really struggling. And, you know, my family is pretty well off, like, but I was alone and like, I was not telling anyone and I was not really expressing like the financial horrors that I was living through. And I would just pray to God for a way to make it happen. And one of my friends has really helped me relook at that and saying, okay, you had a lot of debt, but God gave you a way to find your way out and just be thankful that way. Right. And like, that really helped me to shift things. Like God gave me what I needed, even though I felt like such a bad, crummy person, cause financially I was in over my head. But I made it and, I would, you know, slowly was getting better. She had me on various antibiotics, prescriptions that they give to people with HIV, coincidentally enough, things that are strong enough to treat that, right, is what I was put on. And I was pulsing these different antibiotics over a course of 2.5 years. And I started to have organ failure towards the end. And she was constantly checking my blood and monitoring my organs to see, but I was starting to show distress because it was just too much, right? And she had me on a lot of different supplements and herbs, and I was doing a ton of research. I remember reading Unlocking Lyme by Bill Rawls.
Yeah.
And it was such a good hope inspiring book for me. And it was something actually was on audio that I could listen to. And it really just made me feel like I could get better. And that's the stuff that I really started to believe in and started to gravitate towards were stories about people who were getting better. And I stayed out of the support groups because a lot of times they were too overwhelming and just very, it's sad because there's a lot of people who are stuck in that space that are just sick. It's
negative.
And
yeah.
I couldn't expose myself to that. Like I just had to put my blinders on and just keep telling myself, okay, you're getting better. You're getting better. You're getting better. Like it wasn't ever a choice in my head that I wasn't going to get better. Like that thought wasn't there.
Once you knew what was wrong with you, right? And that was exactly where I was. Finally, I could change my whole mindset because I had a diagnosis. So amazing how that works.
It is. Hey, lo and behold, you're not a crazy psycho. Like there really is something wrong with you. Okay, good. Let's work on that. So again, I mean, I changed my whole entire being and I stopped eating sugar, gluten, and dairy because that was supposedly, you know, anti-inflammatory diet. Like I was doing what I could to get that side of myself cleaned up. I started practicing hot yoga. My cousin, God bless him, took me to this hot yoga class and I had no idea what I was getting into. But for the first 2 weeks of that, I would just lay on the ground in a ball and cry and I couldn't even stand through the class. But God bless my teacher, Joel. He has since passed away and I talk to him all the time. But he believed in me and I think he knew how much I needed to be there. And he would put me in the back of the class. He'd open the window for me so that I would get some cooler air. He'd bring me coconut water. He'd put towels on me to cool me down. He really helped me. But I would crawl out of that room on my hands and knees. And I just kept going back. Like my soul knew that I needed to keep going to that. And I think about a lot of people who do these hyperthermia treatments to help themselves. You know, you go to Germany and you heat yourself up to 106 degrees for 4 hours. Yes, exactly. And like, I think over a period of time, that's what hot yoga was doing for me. And I just didn't know it. Like my body just was intuitive enough to know that this is going to help you and you need to just keep going, even if it sucks horribly. And after some time, then I was able to actually like stand up through the class and start to do the postures. And I've been practicing hot yoga now, I guess, probably for at least probably six or seven years because it's been that long that I've been.
Now, see, all those that do that hot yoga, I think they're all crazy. I mean, because I wouldn't even want to just sit in that room. Like, how do you, that's one thing. And I've tried to get on board and I mean, who in their right mind would want to do that? Now I'll sit in a sauna. You don't have to do anything, right? You're just sitting still. But you want me to go out there and do all this stuff and like, seriously, obviously it was one of your game changers and I'm so happy, but they're crazy.
You can stay there if you want to, for sure. Nobody will judge you, I assure you. But I'm the kind that actually even bought a blow up hot yoga dome that is in my basement that I practice every day or as many days as I can in my own home now because COVID turned me into, you know, doing practice at home from the studio for a while. And then I just got spoiled. Instead of getting up at 4:30 to go to the 6 a.m. class, now I can get up maybe at 5:30 and do like a 6:30 class in my dome. And I'm a lot happier for it. But that also, again, just helped me change my relationship with myself, right? And that's a moving meditation that really helped me just to calm my being, give me strength, something, again, to relate to myself differently through. And then just slowly over time, I really cleaned up a lot of things in my life. Like I don't drink alcohol anymore. I quit smoking cigarettes. I think actually before I got diagnosed, I quit smoking cigarettes because I thought that was another thing. Like maybe I wasn't oxygenating enough blood in my body because of the cigarettes. And so I got rid of those. What else? I don't have caffeine anymore. I quit that like a long, long time ago. Like my laundry detergent, my soaps, like anything and everything that my body was coming into contact with, I replaced with a healthier, upgraded version. And it all helped. And that's what I try to explain to people is like, I basically think about it as you needed to take a sledgehammer and hit this thing from every angle possible, because that's really how deep and integrated into my system it had become. So I was just whacking at it as hard as I could from every side, and every little thing that we can do is going to add up. And I often picture little pebbles, like we're just making little pebbles to build up a wall to crawl out of the hole and come back into the light, right? Or I would tell myself like literally 1 foot after the next, because sometimes that's all I had the energy to do was one step at a time, 1 foot after the next, just keep going, move your left foot now, move your right foot. And I remember, I think it was Thomas Edison that I had read about, maybe it was Einstein, one of the two. And he would say, thank you with every step, thank on the right, you on the left, thank you, thank you, thank you. So that was like my like turning towards gratitude and trying again to restructure how my brain was going. And every step I'd thank you, like it was.
I love that. I've never heard that. I love that.
But began to meditate, and I really started to listen to people like Joe Dispenza and figuring out how to rewire my brain and figuring out how to go from such a state of dis-ease to a state of health and well-being and gratitude and abundance. And slowly but surely you begin to balance the scale. Like my scale was this far off in terms of unhealthy things. Like I was all the way here. It's like I had to put things back over on this side of the scale to rebalance myself. And each one of those little pebbles, again, is something that's going to help to recalibrate your system. And it's hard. It takes the will of God to manage to do this, but it's possible. And now here I am 7 years out, and many people are like, do you really need antibiotics? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I don't know, but I did what I thought I needed to do to help myself. And so I did the antibiotics for 2.5 years, and I probably tore up the insides of my body pretty good with that. And I've been working on repairing those kinds of things that were probably more detrimental in some aspects, but overall, I'm really thankful for it. That lady that I went to see, that's $550. She got me like 85% of the way better, right? Yeah. And at one point, I remember I had posted a picture on Facebook. It was, I think, January 31st. And it was the last time I had gone to see her. And I was so over the moon. Like, I felt like I had won the lottery. Like, I was like, woo, I don't have to come anymore. Like, I've gotten better. I'm so thankful. And I still don't even think I understood the magnitude of what I had accomplished. Like, I didn't really grasp it. And for her, that lady, that was probably one of the most rewarding things ever, was for her to have a patient that was like, I am well, I don't need to come see you anymore.
Yes.
And I hope she gets a lot more patients that are able to tell her these kinds of things. And I still talk to her all the time. I thank her from the bottom of my heart. She's actually going to be a guest on my podcast coming up soon. And she saved my life, right? And I thank that other lady who was a diner at my restaurant, that her office then was the place that diagnosed me. I thank her all the time. I see her post something on Facebook and I'm like, thanks for saving my life.
Yeah.
Thanks for helping save my, you know, and like, I know she's probably like, stop it already. Like, but truly, like,
yes,
without that place,
yes,
I wouldn't be here anymore. I would have checked out. Like, I would not have lasted. I couldn't last any longer. I couldn't do it anymore. And so if you're at that point, just know that there are things that can help turn that, and just keep believing in yourself, keep pushing. If you've got people telling you there's nothing wrong with you, but you know deep down inside there is something wrong with you, go find someone else. Ask on Facebook for Eastern-minded people or whatever you've got to do to find somebody who can corroborate or validate what you're going through, and that it's not just a figment of your imagination, that there is legitimately something off within yourself. And even if you don't get a diagnosis, clearly something is off within self. And since this whole thing too, I had gone back to school to become an Ayurvedic practitioner. Ayurveda is the oldest holistic medicine system in the world. It's 5,000 years old, and it has survived the test of time. Many generations, it wasn't written. It was a verbal pass along tradition. And so in my mind, if something has that much wherewithal that it stands the test of time through that, and even now they're proving many things that the ancients were teaching, and they're proving it scientifically now in our version of science, that they're right, that they knew, you know, like that I have a lot of respect for. And so once I started my support group, and then I built a reputation in the community for helping people that way, I felt compelled to learn a system that I could help people with, right? Like I didn't want to just be willy-nillying it. Like I wanted to have some corroboration to my intuition,
right,
to say, okay, this is what you should probably be doing for yourself. And so I just recently graduated in May. It took me 4 years to get through that program. It's a 1500 hour course, but I do work full-time job. I also do, again, a lot of advocacy. I do a lot of other things. And so I only have X amount of time each day, and I make the most of it. But it was a two-year program, and I could have done it in three, but I had to take anatomy and physiology 1 and 2 college level. And I tried desperately to do it online on my own. And like, I'd still be reading chapter 2 because I was reading every book in the textbook, like going through, and it was just like, oh my God, So I finally went to the community college here and I finished, and I'm so grateful for that experience. That was wonderful.
Well, despite congratulations. Congratulations.
Thanks. Despite the fact of dissecting a fetal pig in my garage on the weekends, right? Like, that was definitely something I didn't know was coming to me, but that's good. At least it was at the end of my schooling that I could push myself through. And so again, now I've become an Ayurvedic practitioner. I learned how to do Reiki. So I'm a level 2 certified Reiki practitioner. And I also learned Theta healing, which Theta is kind of like a sped up version of therapy without words to try to help people. And I haven't had too many clients for that, but the ones that I've had are like, you have no idea how much this has changed me. And I'm like, well, okay, that's good feedback, right? Like, I'm glad. And I've had some pretty crazy experiences doing that on myself. And then I also learned how to do palm reading, chirology. So like you can, our hands tell really good story about how we relate to the world. And you can see a lot about people, their traumas, their tendencies, how they're really kind of wired. And I got so much validation out of that, that I was compelled enough to learn this. So I've got all these skills that I've learned to do. And I'm trying to, again, figure out exactly how I put that into telling people who I am and what I do. What I've boiled it down to is that I basically help people learn how to have a different relationship with self and how to relearn how to be, right? Like, or have greater inner peace. That's really what my hope is, because dis-ease comes out of dis-ease of body, mind, and soul. It's not just a physical thing. I think a lot of times people might be spiritually sick and they don't necessarily acknowledge that, or they're not connection enough with themselves to understand that. And then it presents itself as a physical impairment. And that at least is what happened to me in the best way that I could understand what had happened to me. And so anything I can do, again, to help people have greater inner peace, have a greater acceptance of self, is just going to help them heal better and heal more succinctly. And I believe very much in that. And I also was talking to my acupuncturist today. I was like, you know, I've got to figure out how to market this better. But when I talk to someone who doesn't know what's happening with their body, and like, I was talking to someone today, for example, through work, and she was telling me she got pulled out of her ravine hiking over the weekend. 911 had to come get her because she just kept profusely vomiting. And I was like, oh, okay. Do you have any other symptoms? Is there anything else going on with you? And she starts telling me some other things. And I said to her, have you ever been tested for tick-borne illness? And she's like, funny, my mom just suggested that to me. I pulled off ticks for myself many times. And like, I get goosebumps in my body when I'm talking to someone like this, that I know that they have it. Right. But like, I'm not there's no test for this. Like, this is just something that happens to me, and I'm still practicing with that energy and like getting to feel that better. Or I think I'm getting more validation. So like, I have more and more people come and talk to me. I get the sensation in my body and I'm like, oh man, they've got it. Right. And they come back and they tell me they have it. And I'm like, okay, so there's your proof that you're not crazy. Like, you're really actually having this happen. So I'm curious as to what she comes back to tell me, but I have a feeling she's got maybe ehrlichiosis at a minimum. Just hearing what her symptoms were. And so, I'm like, I'm like the tick detector, right? Or like the Lyme disease detector. I'm just going to be a swami in a room.
Yeah.
And I sit there and people are going to come in and I'm going to get the sensation or not. And I'll be like, that was $50. Thank you. And send them on their way.
You know what though? Like, I know it sounds so funny, right? But I say this to the listeners a lot. I'm like, if you are not moving the needle in your journey with your antibiotics or the herbs that you're doing, get curious, think outside the box. I mean, when I first experienced muscle testing, I thought I was just as crazy as they were, because I actually paid them when they were done. I gave them money for doing, I don't even know what they did. I'm like, they're crazy. Like, really? You don't know until you know. Right. And I don't do blood work. I don't test for Lyme. I do everything on muscle testing. And that was throughout my whole entire journey. I did my Igenix blood test one time in 2015. Never did it again, nor will I ever. I don't feel I need to. I'm healthy. Yeah. I periodically get muscle tested. And all this, you know, I hate to say voodoo because people attach that to witchcraft, but whatever the word is, right? Thinking outside the box, doing energy, our body is energy, right? That's and right. we right. can read each other's energy. So it really is a thing, you know, and it's just more people need to be more open to it, you know? Yes. And sometimes it takes becoming desperate. Well. Being sick with Lyme, right? And then running out of options. And so what you're doing, I think, is incredible. And we need people like you. We just need more people to think outside the box and be open to this. Because that was my whole, I never took a single antibiotic. All I did was holistic. I did all the things I call crazy, right? But it saved my life.
All those too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Float tanks and emotion code and body code and magnets and everything and anything. That's also another skill I've acquired. It's like I'm a walking encyclopedia for alternative options. So if you want to know anything about something different that might potentially help you, you can call me because I'm sure I can tell you about something that you never tried before or even probably knew existed.
Right.
And I'm still learning, right? Like there's still so much to learn, as much time as in space and energy that I put into this. I can still learn new things every day.
Yeah.
And another thing that I would just like to highlight for people is the importance of understanding about mold and heavy metals, right? And so mold is a big thing. SIRS, I've got another friend, Heather Sutherland. She's been on my show, but she's been teaching me a lot.
Heather's been on my show a couple years ago.
Yeah, she's more of a mold expert. And so I'm excited she's going to offer a course soon to learn about mold and you know, I know the importance of it, but I just don't know enough about it. So I'm looking forward to understanding more about that because, you know, it's an immunosuppressant. And so if you're in a moldy environment or you're being exposed to mold, it's really important for you to understand that because if you're not making progress with your journey and you've not been checked for this, this is definitely an avenue to go down because you're just going to keep perpetually probably staying ill or unwell if you're not able to get to the root cause of what really it is. And that can also be a major component from my guests that I've had on my show. I think probably 50% of them have had mold problems, right? And I know I had mold in my old house. So maybe that's what also triggered what was going on with me. I will never know the exact root cause because right. it was just a very gradual decline into hell.
Right.
Once I moved out of that space, now it's been 4 years I've been living in my house here. I don't have mold here. I learned my lesson. I live on top of a hill, not at the bottom. The water goes down, not into my house anymore, which is really good. So
I'm glad you really brought up that because I feel like mold and parasite heavy metals are, of course, important as well.
Yes.
But I can't tell you how many people I've talked to and they're like, I'm not getting better. I've changed my protocol. I've done this. Don't test for parasites because 1,000,000% you'll be negative. Whether you see the parasite or not, just treat parasites. I will forever do a parasite cleanse a couple times a year, regardless. Mold. Parasites are mold. Mold get tested. And if you're in a moldy home, you're literally flushing money down the toilet to treat. If you Correct. Can't get out of that environment. And I know, like, who can just pick up and move and leave their... We get it, right, Anne? Like, we know, we That's understand right. this, but we're telling That's right. you, you're fighting a battle that you will never win.
That's right.
And mold is a huge thing. And I luckily never dealt with it because there's a lot of, you know, really sticky things that I don't know. You know, I just thought you could put a petri dish in your house. And then if it's clear, you're good, like, you know what I mean? That's kind of not how it goes. But so there's a lot of information. But those are the two things that have been missed with so many people doing years of treatment. And then all of a sudden they get tested and boom, they start getting well.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yep. Yep. And so, you know, I guess just ultimately for people, like, just know that you can get better. You just have to figure out your own Rubik's Cube. Is another way that I see it. We've all got our combination and we've all got to just work through it and figure it out or like we're a big ball of yarn jumbled together, or lots of static layers, and you just got to like peel out one at a time, and you might uncover a couple more in the process of peeling one away, but it's going to be okay. You've got to get to the bottom of it. You've got to get through it to get out of it, and just keep going. Believe in yourself. Don't listen to the naysayers. If you've got toxic people in your life, shut them out. It's a matter of life or death. It's a matter of life or death. And you got to take that kind of stuff seriously and put yourself as the top priority. Your health is incredibly important. You're worth it. 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 You're so worth healing yourself and taking the time to do different things to give yourself the priority in your life and to put yourself back on top. You know, I think about that analogy. If we don't fill up our own cup, what do we have left over to give to someone else? Nothing. And we all want to serve. I would hope we all want to serve each other in a better space and capacity. Not everyone does. Some of us are takers. I get it. But most of us who are givers, we want to have something left over to give. And if we're not pouring into our own cup, there's nothing left. You have to rearrange that paradigm in your head and make yourself the priority. It might be painful. It might be uncomfortable. People who are used to you giving everything to them are probably not going to understand or like the new version of you. Too bad. You've got to cut the dead weight and you've got to keep moving forward with your own healing process. And if you need a cheerleader, I'm great for that. I promise you. I'm sure that you're great for that as well. You can listen to either of our podcasts and hopefully get some more wind in your sails to keep going. And it will get better. It is possible to heal. That's another thing I would say, is just think about words that are more akin to healing. I'm not sick, I'm healing. Change your vocabulary, change your vernacular with yourself, and make it more into a positive state of being. Again, I mentioned Joe Dispenza, like Marianne Williamson is another one that I really enjoyed a lot. Brene Brown, trying to think about some of my other spiritual teachers that I really latched onto that really helped propel me. Sadhguru is someone I listen to a lot now, but find those people that are maybe weird to others, but they're more of an enlightened spirit or soul, yeah. Right? And they're going to help you elevate yourself past that so that you can propel yourself enough forward to get better.
Well, I couldn't have said it any better. Yeah. Every one of those things is just so important, right? And, you know, it's interesting because I say it a lot on the show. Like I talk about, you know, change your mindset, toxic people, you know, toxicity. We're trying to get rid of our body. Well, people are toxic. Products are toxic. Like, cut that out. And sometimes you can hear the same thing from the same person and then you hear it again from a different person and the light bulb comes on. So I'm so glad you said all of that being my guest, great. Because we needed to hear it again, right? Maybe it's going to click because it's so true. We've been down the journey that you guys are going through right now. And the most important thing is just know in your mind, you know, have faith in whatever protocol you're doing right now that you're going to get well, keep those positive thoughts and just know that there's hope. There's inspiration because that's what our shows are all about. And so you need that. You reach out to Anne, you reach out to me. We're the Lyme Village is the best village I've discovered along my journey. It's full of a lot of amazing people. So you have support whether you think you do or not.
110%. Just find the right support. Like, don't find somebody who's kind of a dead weight bringing you down. Find somebody who's going to elevate you and buoy you up. And
yes,
I call my show the Silver Liming because like not everything about it was bad, right? There were parts of it that were really good. And meeting people like you have been one of the best outcomes for me. Finding my life purpose,
yeah.
Figuring out a different relationship with myself, getting stronger with my relationship with God. Cause I'll tell you, that's a person that I hated tremendously in the middle. I was
that
so
love hate relationship I had. Oof. It was bad. Yeah. Oof. Yeah.
So angry. And just know that you're not alone. Like that imagery of people walking down the beach and there's two sets and then there's only one set of footprints and that person thinks God abandoned them. And it's like, no, that was God carrying you. And I know for me, God carried me a lot of the way because there's no way that I would still be here. There's no way without angels, without support, without whatever it was, divine being just helping me through. I couldn't have walked it alone. I couldn't have. Yeah. So
Thank you, Anne. I so appreciate you coming on and appreciate your podcast and what you do. And it just is such a great feeling to be able to share the things we had to learn the hard way, right? And let us give it back to the community out there that needs it. So I appreciate you, my friend. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. And likewise, I enjoy your show very much too. And I'm grateful just to have someone else on the same mission as me. Thank you.
I sure hope you listeners enjoyed that episode. Whether it's hope you needed, a little inspiration today, or just maybe some validation that what you're feeling, what you're going through is real. Maybe you needed tips on how to treat at home, ideas, thoughts, detoxing, whatever it is. I truly just hope it's what you got out of today's episode. That is my only hope, is just to give back to this community in any way possible. So go to the about of this podcast, scroll down to the bottom and find that donation link. Go ahead and click on there, and anything that you'd like to donate or offer is all just going to go to help to pay towards the studio cost.